Welcome, everyone, joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We offer original articles and reviews on many of the topics that are covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type, but if you would like a simple URL for your website web browser to find it, just type into your web browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, and we also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. All of this information can also be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide a cogent answer, and Bob KD2NVB will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with a word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob, KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody out there. There's some people out there. Looking forward to a nice net tonight. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, likewise, I'm sure. Once again, I am AC2GS. The name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. So if anyone is out there with any questions or comments or topics for discussion, we're ready for them. Just hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign. Well, it would seem that we have another rather quiet night, but this is kind of the way it's been going. The beginning is kind of slow, but usually it warms up over time. I wish I had a story to tell or a repair that I recently made that's of interest. About a week or so ago, my laptop, which is a Lenovo, had a fan failure, which I have a lot. I must live in a dusty environment. The ball bearings apparently get damaged over time. And in the, I think it's about a six-year life of my laptop, I've had to have it repaired twice. And unfortunately, the warranty expired. So realizing that I was probably going to need a replacement thermal fan, I got one via eBay and kept it in the drawer someplace. And so when my laptop fan failed, I popped it. It happened right before the general meeting last Wednesday night. After the general meeting was over, I undid all the little screws at the base. And I used one of those little sputters to pry apart the plastic internal snaps and popped it apart and unscrewed the fan and put the new one that I had bought through eBay and screwed it down and connected the electrical power to it and snapped everything back together and screwed the little screws in and turned it on. And thankfully, the new fan is working beautifully, no noise at all. But just in case, I ordered another fan, a replacement via eBay. They're relatively inexpensive. They cost me about $25-$30. This one cost about $30. And so for the next time that the fan fails me, I'll just have to do it all over again. So that's my little story for this week. Once again, I am AC2GS. The name is Roy. And this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. So So if anyone out there has any particular questions or topics of interest, let her rip.
Good evening, Roy. This is KB2BEA.
Hello, Maxim. I hope all is well.
Things are good. Just put the kids down. But I had a question. I haven't gotten to play with my antennas. So I kind of have two related but separate questions. One with the one I've been pondering on. So I've been talking about testing out my antenna, the NFED with like a V49-1 Balun that I put together myself based on the instructions. Besides just reopening it up and just double checking the instructions and making sure that I wound the thing correct, like, you know, the same way that it looked in the picture. Is there any way, electrical way to test the, you know, that I've wired the thing correctly, that I've made the right number of turns, or that whatever that piece of equipment's called where you wind wire around ferrite, like how do I make sure that I actually did that correctly? Because no amount of tinkering with the length of the wire was helping. I wonder if I did something wrong on the inside.
Okay, well, with Balun, there's really fundamentally two ways that it could go terribly wrong. One is if it's just very lossy and most of the energy is being dissipated as heat, which gives you a false sense that you have a perfect SWR, because a lot of SWR meters play games. They measure the reverse power. So in the case of a perfect match, there's negligible reverse power, and so it reads it as a one-to-one. But if you connect it to just some kind of resistance load and just dissipate all the energy so that there's nothing left for it to reflect back on it, it falsely reads as a one-to-one SWR. So it's always nice to know that the power is getting past the Balun. Well, one of the big problems with Balun's can be that you're not getting the 48-to-1 ratio that you want. You can measure that using your VNA. You can take a non-inductive resistance of 49 times 50, whatever that would approximate, and use that as the antenna load, and sweep your VNA and see if you got a 50-ohm impedance at the other end of the Balun. If you didn't get a 50-ohm impedance at the other end, then there's something wrong with your Balun as far as impedance matching, and that could provoke all kinds of troubles. You're trying to get a 50-ohm impedance into the input of your receiver and your transmitter. If, on the other hand, you're not... the Balun is not operating either at 64-to-1 or 49-to-1 as it's supposed to, then that could give you a terrible impedance mismatch and cause all kinds of problems with the transmitter kind of folding the power back on itself. So I hope that makes sense.
Okay, that kind of does make sense. So that's interesting. So instead of connecting, right now it's connected to a wire, and instead of a wire, connecting it to a dummy load, 49 times 50, whatever, half of 4900, and then making sure that actually I'm getting 50 ohm impedance on this. That's interesting. I got to try that out and see how that goes. That might be a good way to see if all the connections are correct and I'm actually getting the right impedance there. That's interesting. Yeah, it could be a whole bunch of other problems. Second question. With regard to antenna tuners and this kind of stuff. So the Zygo G90 has its own internal antenna tuner, but it's limited. And I've been looking at some other antennas, like, for example, I think it's JC12 or something like that. It's basically a multi-band vertical antenna, and I believe you put it together by adding sections or removing sections. Do I need an antenna tuner for something like that, or because you're kind of adding and removing sections, you're kind of tuning it as it is? Or is an antenna tuner something I'm going to need if I'm going to use one of the vertical antennas with a G90?
Well, it sort of depends. If you're actually able to get your antenna self-resonant by itself, then there's no need for an antenna tuner. The only reason people use antenna tuners is to get around areas where their antennas are not really resonant. So they don't produce a nominal 50-ohm impedance, and with wider mismatches, you get reflections, and that produces thermal thermal waste in the transmission lines and such. So the bottom line is it depends on how resonant you can get your antenna to be. If the adjustments are fine enough so that you're relatively close to 50 ohm impedance, then you don't need a separate antenna tuner. It's always a nice thing to have available if you're interested in this hobby, because invariably at some point or other, you're going to need one. There's always going to be some multi-band antenna that's kind of mediocre at a bunch of different places rather than being terribly good at one place. But for this specific antenna design, you probably could punt and do without one.
That's an interesting point. I do remember our discussion about that antenna tuners is basically cheating, because in the end, the antenna is not properly tuned. It's not properly tuned to a particular frequency, but yet you're just making it look like the 50 ohm resistance. That's interesting. Cool. I guess the part three, you got to look up this antenna type. It's some vertical. I just want to see if you've had any experience with it. Do you mind if I'm going to look it up?
Okay. I mean, there are a bunch of self-resonating, self-tuning, manual type of antennas. I probably would never want to own one because it would strike me as being a real pain in the backside. You know, there's MFJ sells this contraption that's basically an inductor coil attached to a whip antenna that kind of fits out of a windowsill, and it has a little alligator clamp. And the idea is you change the alligator clamp to a different position on the coil inductor, and that resonates the antenna. So every time you change the frequency, you got to get up and you got to play around with an alligator clip, and then you got to figure out how you're going to figure out that you've tuned it correctly. You need something with an SWR meter, and you probably have to put a little juice into the antenna to see how much gets reflected back and such. So, you know, these manually resonating antennas are doable, and they're inexpensive, but I don't know. They strike me as really a pain in the backside, personally.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. This one's kind of like that, and I'm looking at it to be a portable antenna, so I can take this whole rig outside, put the G90 onto a couple of batteries, which I have, and then take this thing outside. I'm just wondering if you've had experience with this type of antenna, and then, like, do I really need a antenna tuner with it, which I think I probably don't, but we'll see. So it's a JVC-12, sold by GDX Engineering. There is also AliExpress has some versions of themselves, also called Pac-12, but with DX Engineering called What's funny about it is that the Pac-12 copy is like $80 cheaper, so it's $100 instead of $180. Anyway, just wonder if you've looked at these kind of antennas before.
No, not this particular one, but again, it's not kind of revolutionary. You know, as long as you're all right with kind of staying either on one frequency or very, very close to one frequency, it's probably not that much of a hassle. But, you know, if you kind of shift from one end of the band to the other end, I don't know exactly how much fidgeting one would have to do with this particular design to get it close to resonance or not. But I don't have any particular experience with it. I try and stay away from Chinese stuff. You know, the electronics is kind of okay. I kind of think of it as a little bit of Russian roulette without a bullet. You know, if it doesn't work, so be it. I mean, I have this glorified high intensity air gun that's supposed to take the place of canned air, and it comes from China. Yeah, I used it for a little while, and then it failed. And the United States distributor doesn't respond to emails. And the company that manufactures it told me that I could just put a RMA number on it and send it back to China, and they'd be more than happy to fix it and return it. And I looked up on UPS how much it was going to cost to ship it to China, and it's about $2 less than getting a new one shipped overnight from Amazon. So, you know, I don't know. Chinese stuff tends not to be terribly high quality still, unless you have some third party that kind of guarantees it, like Apple, who manufactures a lot of their stuff in China, make sure that their stuff is high quality. But otherwise, Chinese stuff can be kind of iffy.
don't we know that? Well, that's interesting. One thing you said kind of got me thinking. You're right, like a resonant from one side. Like, I keep thinking about resonant within a particular band. Oh, is it resonant 10, 20, and like doing that adjustment? But like resonant across band is something I've considered. I do need to read a little bit about how easy it is to adjust from one end to the other end of the band. I think there's a little bit of an antenna tune in G90, so maybe that's fine. But I got to think about that. I know this antenna was recommended by Taylor in... who uses a lot of digital communication by taking it out of the park. That's kind of thinking might be a good try, but I'm going to do a little bit more research and see if I can fix my current antenna. Still, you know, never-ending goal of getting on your 10-meter net.
Yeah, I hope you accomplish it. Usually Asian radios, built-in antenna tuners, are sort of designed at best to be able to correct for a 3-to-1 mismatch. If it's more than that, you need some kind of American or European version of an antenna tuner with significantly more expensive, higher inductance and capacitance components and such. But you probably will be able to tweak it for the band if it's resonant, you know, someplace in the middle of a given band, and using an Asian antenna tuner to kind of tweak it around that 3-to-1 ratio. So it's very likely that it's doable.
Cool. Yeah, I'd be interested to try that out. I'll mute this stuff. So pretty interesting. Mostly, I'm kind of want to get some time to try tune my actual antennas. We'll see how it goes. Cool. Well, I'm gonna let someone else butt in for a minute.
Okay. Very good. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 9 p.m. And we're open for business. Anyone with any questions or topics of interest, please hit that push to talk and say your piece. Well, we seem to have kind of slowed down again. So I'll tell a little short story about a different subject. Just to kind of demonstrate that we are lucky people here at Kings County Radio Club, Limark had their usual 10-meter net this Sunday night starting at 8 p.m. And at around 9:40 p.m., apparently the circuit breaker failed on the service rack that contained most of the computer and transmitter and receiver components of the Glen Oaks repeater. And so at around 9:40, the repeater just went down and stayed down for the rest of the night. Some club members had to drop in the following morning and recycle the circuit breakers. They had not tripped, but they weren't powering things up. So that kind of suggests that the circuit breaker itself is problematic, probably needs to be replaced. I believe they plugged the rack into a completely different circuit for the time being. So we're very, very fortunate. We're very lucky. And I appreciate the luck our club has. You know, Limark has a lot of repeaters. They put a lot of money into the repeaters. You know, they spend thousands of dollars a year, and on the average a year, about $1.50. So count your blessings, everyone.
Hey, Roy, it's AC2ZV. Quick checking in. I'm in a club in Manhattan, so thought I'd just say hi while I can't make it on the radio tonight.
Okay, William, it's good to hear you. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I hear the music in the background. So have fun, enjoy yourself, and we'll talk again in some future edition of the Technical Net.
This KG2VA. I'm a little jealous of William right now. I would love to be in the club listening to music.
Yeah, it's kind of very rare that I've experienced people talking on the repeater with that type of music in the background. There was a guy in Limark who really liked Echolink. So he would go to bars and restaurants and all kinds of things, and he would take out whatever he had as a cell phone and run Echolink, and you would always kind of hear glasses tinkling in the background and people mumbling in the background, all kinds of life of Manhattan in the background. So I appreciate William gave us that little taste of life out there.
Kilo 4, Delta Delta, Quebec.
Yep, recognized. What can I do you for?
Balfang portable, I just bought a couple of days ago. See how it does on here.
Okay, very good. I hear you. You're about 50% noise. I don't know if you're inside or outside. If you're outside, if there's a little bit of an elevation someplace, that might improve your reaching into the repeater. If you're inside, get closer to a window. That might help. And also, you might want to kind of try different antenna positions for your Baofeng, or get a nice long whip that's a little bit higher gain for the Baofeng. Baofengs are nice little radios. I often joke that they should be included in Cracker Jack boxes, but I have a Baofeng. I consider it kind of a disposable radio. You know, if I lose my ICOM 92AD that cost, I think, about $450, I would have a tier or two. But if I lost the $30 radio, I think I could get over it rather well. So I welcome you among us. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m., and I hope you make a habit of coming by. Well, unfortunately, that 50-60% noise has gone up to about 90-95% noise. Unfortunately, I couldn't make out what you were saying. So you might find a better position for the Baofeng, or there's always the option of Echolink. I tell everyone about Echolink because it's rather nice that it's free. You just Google it and submit some form of proof that you're a licensed amateur radio operator. They'll give you an account, and there are software applications, there are PC versions, and I think a Mac version, and there's cell phone versions, and you just dial up our call sign, KC2RC-R, and it gives a pretty good signal into the repeater. So consider that as an option in addition to your Baofeng.
Dad, I switch back to my whip antenna here, move a little bit closer to the window. Don't know how well that works, but yeah, I've got Echolink on my phone, so I'll be tuning in on there. Thanks, guys.
Very good. Your signal is much, much improved. It was only maybe about 10% noise, so it was very readable.
I had a few antennas in here. I think this long whip is probably the best for this thing, so at least found one that works for me.
Yeah, usually the longer the better. I mean, sometimes it's more dangerous. You could poke your eye out. I have a series of antennas. I don't know how you're maneuvering them. I have found the easiest way to deal with handy talkie antennas is to use because they're all SMA plugs. SMA plugs are a little on the dainty side, I've found, and it's rather easy to screw them up, and just if you put a little bit too much torque on them, you could twist them right out of the case. So what I usually do is when I get any radio with a SMA connector, I get a BNC to SMA adapter. They're very small, very relatively rugged, and then I can insert an antenna using a BNC bayonet connection, which is a lot less fiddly than SMA. And so for hotspots around the house, I have this 1-inch little rubber antenna, but for outdoors, I put on the long whip.
I've got quite a few. I've probably got a few of those here in my pile of junk.
Okay, that's good. You can never have too many antennas. Unfortunately, I think you can't have too many handy talkies. I've known a few guys who kind of got into this weird habit and would walk around with more than half a dozen handy talkies strapped across their belt. So, but you know, more the merrier as far as antennas. They're different sizes. Some work a little bit better than others. So, as some are a little bit more flexible, there are these odd little whip antennas that are designed to be folded over so that you can pack them in a smaller space. When I was a kid, of course, you had the telescoping antennas, which you don't really see that much anymore because they tend to kind of produce a little noise. The separate elements that slide in and out among each other can get corroded, and that can produce problems transmitting through them. But, antennas is a good thing to experiment with. They're not the most expensive part of amateur radio operators' equipment. So, you know, if you got them, use them.
Yeah, the little Baofeng that I've got here, I actually bought three of them. I bought a couple of 2 meter and 70 centimeter, and I bought this one that I'm on now that has 1.25, the 220. I'm not sure if any of you guys are on there regularly, but I'm going to try and see if I can't find a repeater that I can hit with this thing on 220 as well.
Okay, I wish you luck. There is the occasional traffic on 220, but it's a relatively quiet band, unfortunately. I think of the higher frequency above HF, UHF is probably the most used. Then after that, VHF, where we are today. And all the others, 900, 1.2 gig, and 220 is kind of last case. You know, you might pick up a couple of guys. Usually it's a couple of guys who know each other and like to talk to each other on these bands. But you don't pick up a lot of strangers on these other bands. Unfortunately, these days, you don't even pick up a lot of traffic on VHF. There's a few repeaters that are active. There's some frequencies where people talk directly to each other. But a lot of times, if you look at the VHF pan adapter, it's kind of quiet out there.
Yeah, copy that. Yeah, I'll be checking you guys out on here, and I'll be looking around also on 470 centimeter, trying to find a few repeaters I can hit here in central Brooklyn. I'll be working on those from time to time. So good to meet you guys. I guess I'm going to go ahead and go have some dinner. I'm sure I'll see you guys on future nets. KK4DU, portable out.
Okay, very good. Could you give me your call sign a little slower now that I can hear you well?
Sure, copy that. Kilo, Kilo 4, Delta, Delta, Quebec.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Have a great supper, and I hope to talk to you down the line.
See you guys. Thank you, guys. Good night.
Okay, once again, I continue to be Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, AC2GS. Name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. And we're still open for business. We do have a puzzle tonight, so I hope we can get that out. It's not a difficult one, unfortunately. It's not one you can kind of logic out. You sort of have to know what's going on to figure out what the answer is. But we'll see. If anyone has any questions or topics of interest they'd like to bring up, please hit that push to talk.
Well, not much traffic going on tonight, Roy.
Yeah. It's something I've grown used to. Unfortunately, it's everyone in Brooklyn knows everything, so they don't have any questions, I guess. So let's go to the puzzle. It's thankfully it's all in text, so you don't even have to see any illustration. The question is: a variable inductor is set to its maximum value and connected in series with a capacitor to form a tuned circuit. As the value of the variable inductor is decreased, the effect will be that, and you got four choices. So you got a 25% choice of just guessing the right answer. The first answer is resonant frequency will increase. The second is impedance at the resonant frequency will increase. The third C is resonant frequency will decrease. So So you got a situation where you know, A and C can't both be right. And answer D, reactants will increase. So does anyone wish to hazard a guess?
KD2NVB.
What would B again? I know it's not D, but other than that, well, maybe it is D, but I don't think it is.
Foggy, but I'm willing to make a guess.
Okay, Bob, you kind of doubled with Maxim, but both of you were understood. Just for Maxim, the second choice B is impedance at the resonant frequency will increase. So what's your answer tonight, Bob?
Like I say, I really don't know if this is right, but I'm just going to guess D. It could be wrong, but I'm just going to say D. Reactance will increase, but I don't really know if that's right.
Okay, well, when you decrease the inductance, you decrease the reactance. So choice D is wrong.
I don't even remember the exact definition of reactance. Maybe they add or how. Anyway, yeah. I that's someone else. I mean, at this point, I'd just be flailing and picking straws. So why should I even guess at this point?
Okay, let me kind of address it just as a kind of logical problem as opposed to a physics problem. You're changing the value of your components. You have a capacitor, you have an inductor. A given capacitor-inductor pair will give you a particular frequency at which it's resonant. So the easiest way to think about this is to try and figure out whether if you decrease the value of the variable inductor, will that cause the resonant frequency to go up or go down?
Well, that's, yeah, exactly. I figured if it wasn't D, it was either A or C. And I don't remember which is which. I remember these graphs, but I don't remember which is which makes it go down and which makes it go up. So it's just flipping a coin if I say one or the other.
Okay, how's about this? I'll give you the equation. The resonant frequency formula. Frequency equals 1 over 2 pi, the square root of L times C.
Think about it. Well, it sounds like, what was the first part that equals all of that? Is it the resonant frequency? Then it would go down if either one, well, I don't even know. If either one of those things decreased, it would go down, I guess. But that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I'll kind of repeat myself. The frequency is equal to 1 over 2 pi square root of LC.
All right, so it goes up because it's, all right, it's backwards. Got it.
Yeah, the answer is A. The frequency goes up. Both increasing the inductance or increasing the capacitance, because it's an inverse square root relationship, would make the frequency go down. Decreasing either of them makes the frequency go up.
Yeah, that's all kind of obvious to me, except that I was a little foggy-brained before. But I didn't remember what the equation was or anything else before. So, yeah, now I get it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you kind of dissect it, decompile it into its simplest logistical type of answers, you probably would end up, as you mentioned, in the middle someplace that it would either be A or C. So you got a 50-50 chance of just guessing it right. But this is the reason behind that. It's an inverse square root law for both capacitance and inductance. So if either of them go up, then the frequency goes down. If either of them go down, the frequency goes up. So that's our little question for tonight. And as soon as this technical net is over, I will post next TechNet's puzzle, and people can take a look at that and see what they can make of it. So I thank you for participating, Bob.
I want to start looking at these in advance. I always just put these up at the last minute as I'm logging into the net. But on the other hand, if I look it up, I'm kind of cheating. But anyway, look this up on Google, and okay, I got the answer.
The problem with these types of questions is you can Google them. When I try and do Limewark technical puzzles, they're not quite like they're not always they're infrequently related to amateur radio, and it's very difficult to Google them. I make them that way. Like the last puzzle that I had for Limewark was what everyday object I probably mentioned it last TechNet here. What everyday object that most of us own operates at super at supersonic speeds? The answer being canned air. If you just kind of Google that, it's not quite enough of a question for Google to deal with it and give you something terribly useful, thankfully. So, you know, that's the difference between the two technical nets.
Right, I hear you. Yeah, the ones you put on the Limewark, they're sort of like that thinking physics book to some extent.
Yeah, that's sort of what I modeled it after, but I don't use those questions. Dick loved that book. I have that book as well. He enjoyed the puzzles probably more even than me. Occasionally, they were very, very rare. It's very difficult to find something that kind of fits that niche. And occasionally, I would discover two, and I would want to kind of save one for the following week. And if Dick, may rest in peace, knew that I had two TechNet puzzles, he would pretty much demand, as politely as humanly possible, that I tell him both of them that particular week. He didn't want to wait until the next week.
Yes, I think I remember that. And of course, he had his own. You know, he brought up his own, and on the few occasions that I was the one that got the answer to either one of you guys' puzzle, I felt great. It just happened a couple times.
Yeah, it's always fun, but you know, I mean, it's the journey pretty much that's the most important, not necessarily the destination. So you know, I think that this adds a little bit to the nets. I realize that in the olden days on the InfoNet, people used to kind of play Jeopardy and other things like that. I really get a rash when I'm exposed to trivia. I like these exercises when you kind of learn something at the end of them, as opposed to, you know, there was one repeater net where they asked trivia about presidents, and they said, you know, who was the fattest president, who was the skinniest president, who was the tallest president, who was the shortest president. I don't know. I turned the dial.
Yeah, more it's the ones that make you, they think you think outside the box or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I got a bunch of these. You know, I mean, they're very, very similar to the type of stuff that you might get as a question pool for the exams. Although none of these things come from the United States FCC question pool. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Anyway, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We are still open for business if anyone is interested. You know, the way we say things here is, again, a little different with Limewark. Limewark, we kind of have we go from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and we might bleed a little bit over, but not a lot. On this technical net, it's as long as anyone wants it to be. We've had times where we called it a night at 9:30, and others where we were still going on at 11, and I had to actually extend the timeout for the Echo Link. It used to be set to go into receive-only mode after 11 o'clock, but we broke through the 11 o'clock window once, so I changed it to 11:30. Anyway, we're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics, then please feel free, hit that push to talk and say your piece.
AC2GS, KE2PAX.
Yes, Brian.
Yeah, nothing really to add. I've been listening here on and off. I'm just actually doing some troubleshooting on my radio. I can seemingly transmit very well. I'm listening in on Echolink as well, but the receive from this particular repeater, I can only receive it when I'm in the middle of my apartment. So, you know, those weird signals bouncing around, not sure. I'm trying to find a spot where I can both receive and listen at the same time. So nothing directly to add, just letting you know that I'm listening in and trying to troubleshoot, so still helpful, although indirectly.
Okay, very good. You know, one of the things that might be doing that to you is when your building was built. Present-day modern design for a lot of buildings that use plasterboard are relatively radio transparent. My house was built in the late 50s, and that was right before plasterboard became a big thing. So it has the old style of 2x4s with chicken wire and then plaster. And chicken wire provides for a decent a Faraday cage effect. So if your apartment or house has that chicken wire behind the walls, that might be why it's so difficult for RF to get into your house.
Yeah, it's actually, so it was built in the 1920s. By the window, which is where I am now, I can't hear a thing. I need to, even when I turn monitor on, it's noise. But I go into the middle of my apartment, and somehow the way the 2 meter waves are bouncing around, I can hear it perfectly. And there's a few spots inside that I can hear it, but obviously no radio waves are getting out to hit the repeater from there. So, yeah, it's very odd. I don't know what it is. KE2BAX.
Okay, so, you know, like you said, it's what was probably is going on is there's a lot of reflections. There's not that much getting through the wall, but what does end up getting through the wall gets bounced back and forth, and there are areas where the signals positively interfere and others where they negative interfere. And so you found a little bit of a sweet spot. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've noticed that there are acoustic versions of that in buildings where, you know, some areas of the building sound terrible and others sound beautiful. It's one of the reasons why a lot of people tend to practice their singing in the shower, because the environment of a small room with material that usually gets put on the walls of these things to make them waterproof gives you a nice bounce back to your voice.
Yeah, I'm sure it's something like that. I appreciate as much as other people want to talk. I'll let you guys. Someone else jump on. I just wanted to let you know I'm listening in, and it's helpful to me diagnosing those bounces and waves in my apartment, so I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Brian. Once again, I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We meet here on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. And we're still open for business. If there's anyone out there listening to us, if you just got your license or if you just got back into the hobby or if you have a question of why something that should be working isn't working or any other type of a question or a comment, then this is the place and this is the time. So hit the push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign.
Hey, Roy. Can you do VA? Since nobody else is thinking out, just curious what you're playing with these days, radio or not radio and technology-wise?
Well, not much new radio-wise. I haven't bought any new toys. Playing with my Flex radio, playing with my Icom, playing with my FDM 400, but, you know, they're not new stuff. I'm enjoying the experience of my Prusa XL printer. I purchased a kit that has bits and pieces to put in an enclosure around it so that I will be better able to use higher temperature plastics. It's open-ended, so usually a little cold breeze is going to warp things that are designed to melt at, 230 plus. PLA melts at around 200 and change, so you don't have to worry about drafts. So I put together the it's a combination kit. They sell the pre-cut acrylics. They package little magnets and screws and bolts and what have you. And I printed out the rest in PLA myself. And one of these days, I'm going to put that thing together. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've enjoyed playing with the Prusa. I have a Prusa Mini. Doesn't need any enclosure. And I haven't tried printing with any harder or plastics, or at least any plastic that needs to go up that high. When I get there, I probably will have to do that. But I've printed a couple of things and custom design things. It's kind of a lot of fun. Although, for now, relatively limited for me in terms of application. I'm not manufacturing. But with the XL, man, you can build some big things. I saw one during one of the events, and I could build some pretty gigantic parts.
Yeah, it has a very big field. Mine came with five different heads, so I can use five different filaments on the same model. I did have a failure with it a couple of months ago. I probably mentioned it before, but one of my heads failed. It had some kind of warning screen about thermal runaway, and after a while I figured out that the heating element, the cable connecting the electronics to the heating element, it's kind of brittle, and so with the movement of the head it kind of broke contact, so it didn't heat up the heating element, which my printer thought was a thermal runaway, but it was kind of the exact opposite. So I contacted Prusa there in, I forget exactly where in East Europe it is. Czechoslovakia? There is no Czechoslovakia. I think it's the Czech Republic is where it's located. They were very nice about it and very helpful, and they shipped me a heating element, and I took the head apart and put in a new one, and it started to work again. But yeah, it's very nice and has multiple heads. I haven't really taken that much advantage of the multi-head printing. I have taken advantage of, in my old printer, if you ran out of plastic, it kind of ruined the job. With this printer, it just kind of stops, pauses, and says, please put in some more plastic. And you put in more plastic, and it just goes from that spot, continues on. So I'm a bit of a happy camper with it. Also, I've been getting into the home control devices. I used to have Insteon devices, but they went bankrupt, and then they got bought up by some guy, and its future is very, very dicey. So I decided it was time to swap to something new, and I have a new system that works with Zigbee and Z-Wave technologies, and I have my Venetian blinds open up on command, and lights go on, and motion detectors sense me and turn the lights on. In the shack, when I walk in, the lights go on. When I close the door to the shack, it powers down and puts everything into sleep mode that needs to. So I'm having fun with little technology toys.
Yeah, home automation could be fun and could really take over real life. For now, it's for me, it's more light. And turning on and off, like TV, receiver, music going. The funny part about it now is that because all of this is running, my daughter figured out how to use Google a while ago, and Alexa, now my son's getting to it. And now there's a lot of contention of who's running these devices. Especially when it's time for bed. Hey, stop messing around. Don't put that on. Ah, no, please. Yeah, it's a bit fun. But the multi-color printing thing, that's actually pretty cool, because the only way I can do it with my printer, because it's only a single head, is by creating a model that layers it on. I just like going vertically. And then when it gets to a new color, just switching it out, which this model allows for. But yeah, I can't quite do multi-printing where it mixes the color together, which is actually pretty cool. But I couldn't quite justify that, even the face and the extent just yet. We'll see. Maybe one day.
Yeah, when you send the little ones off to college, finally, that's when guys start to spend way too much money on their own toys. There is a technology. There's two different ways of doing multicolor other than the way that you do. There's multiple heads that just kind of are feeding different plastic. There's also something called AMS, in which there's a mixer at behind the single head, and it fuses the different filaments at a farther off point and feeds it into a single extruder. And for that, you need to have kind of a extruded pile of waste plastic, because you have to flush out the old color between changes. So it tends to be rather wasteful, depending upon how expensive your filaments are, because you have this you have this pile of garbage plastic just for purging the system. That's called AMS, I believe.
That's an interesting idea. I'm not quite dying to have multi-solid plastic, so I might play with that. I actually kind of want to try some of the softer plastic. I tried printing with that with not a great result. But, yeah, I've had a couple of failures. Not like printer failures, but just you know, print failures. But, for the most part, it works pretty well, I got it. Nonetheless, yeah, that's all I have for today. But I was curious to see what you're playing with. Often you have some interesting ideas. I'll see if anyone else wants to jump in, or you know, maybe it's bedtime.
My guess is it's going to turn out to be bedtime. I just have one other little question, Maxim. You mentioned that you were trying softer stuff. Were you trying the TPA? I have a reel of that I haven't broken open to play with.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it's TPA. It's basically like the more flexible stuff that you would print. Like I was trying to print the frog, that would be a little bit more soft and malleable. But I think it's TPA. Maybe TPU? TPA, TPU, something like that. That kind of plastic.
Yeah, maybe it is TPU. I forget. I haven't used it yet. They come in different hardnesses. I think mine was 95. A lot of reels come in, I think, 87. 87 is softer than 95. And one of the problems that I've seen people have is it's kind of annoying to get it into the extruder because it's so flexible that it flexes in the in that silicone tubing that feeds it into the extruder. So I've seen some people who disconnect the silicone tubing and just manually force it into the extruder and such. So yeah, I think it's TPU.
I didn't get that problem, but I did hear that you can basically the feeder, you can just rip it apart and wouldn't make it in there. For me, the problem was once I started printing and it wasn't really keeping its shape, so I probably needed a little bit more calibration. It was just kind of started falling apart and doing the shrinking in this business. I tried two or three prints and then I kind of gave up and moved on to other things because at that point I was just getting started, needed to figure out how to print some of the other components. There's a lot of prints out there. What did I print last? Printed an enclosure for the FE700. Because that was kind of undue. Usually get my daughter to print it with me so she can press buttons and then watch it print. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, very good. One of the problems with filaments that aren't PLA. PLA is pretty good as far as you don't have to worry that much about humid environments. It's not hygroscopic. But a lot of these other things are increasingly hygroscopic, and I was playing around with a water-soluble type of filament that's used as support. So the idea being that you print it using it as support plastic, and then you build over a PLA or whatever. And instead of having to cut it apart from each other, you just dip it in water, and these very soluble plastic just melts and dissolves. The problem is that it soaks up water like nobody's business. I put it into my extruder, and it started to steam. The melted plastic was steaming, which is not a good sign. So I immediately stopped doing that. And I guess I'm just going to have to put it into some kind of a desiccator dryer or something to squeeze the moisture out of it.
Oh, wow. That is crazy. Especially, I guess, where we live, there's a lot of moisture in the air. Otherwise, you're going to have some kind of a dehumidifier situation going. That's pretty crazy. Huh, interesting. Well, that's cool. All right. Well, let me know what kind of giant thing you decide to print with your Excel printer. We'll be kind of interested to see maybe during the next meeting.
Kilo Echo 2, Charlie. Victor Bravo.
Eaton, is that you?
All my life, that's me. Good evening.
Good evening. I hope you're having a nice day. We're coming up to the tail end of the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If you have any questions or topics or comments to make, please feel free.
QSO. Yeah, just listening to the tail end of the 3D printing conversation, I had an Ender 3. I'm not a big guy into that. I tried. It just didn't work out for me. I passed my setup on to someone who was a little more proficient. And ironically, my daughter, my youngest daughter, when she was in school, she said, "Daddy, Daddy, just use Tinkercad." And I couldn't figure it out. She made me a few parts. As I am an avid remote control helicopter pilot. So she made a few things for me that I knew what I wanted. I knew how I needed it to be. And she made those parts for me. But me personally, I just couldn't wrap my head around the programming. K2CVB.
Okay, a CAD cam can be can give you a migraine, and younger people who just kind of take all these things continue to amaze me. So it's good that you have someone in the younger generation to hold your hand. Yeah, I mean those they probably still are. College courses, you know, they have people sit there and learn how to use CAD/CAM software, and some available ones are a little bit easier to do than others. But yeah, it's a talent like anything else. You know, you just can't kind of sit down and just kind of build something that works the first time. But Creality is a famous you know, inexpensive Chinese manufacturer of 3D model makers. You know, they're building different models every hour and a half, it seems. They build them every which way. I think they just came out with an XY core as opposed to the standard design that they kept on kind of cookie cutter stamping out. But Creality gave people the opportunity to invest in 3D modeling for not that much money.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I jumped on the bandwagon. You know, I do remote control scale models, and you know, when I got to fit VHF antennas on, you know, aircraft and radar balls and camera balls and all this other crazy stuff, it's easier to just 3D print it. You know, a lot of the STL files were already available, so it wasn't that bad. But anything I had to design myself, forget it. You know, I had to have, you know, her show me, scale this up, daddy, scale this down, daddy, make this fit here, and Ajita, KE2CDB.
AC2GS. Well, yeah, I mean, for the most part, I try and just kind of reprint other people's successes as opposed to building my own things. I put together little simple stuff, but you know, some of these guys are artists. You know, they sculpt and do all kinds of things. And, you know, I got these little statues of famous people. I got Tesla. I got Asimov. I got Einstein. I got all those. And, you know, these guys just puttering around with the 3D modeling software. So, you know, I leave it to the artists.
Yeah, QSO. Yeah, there's a few people at my remote control flying club who actually 3D print their aircraft, and I was a bit skeptical about that. But they go, you know, and they fly the FEV thing with the goggles, and, you know, it's almost VR-ish, but they seem to work pretty well. You know, they just, it's a matter of the materials that they use to maintain the structural integrity of the vehicles. Very interesting to see how those things go together. Either they can print them in they have a print bed that's large enough to print the whole vehicle, or they print it in sections and then use adhesives to bond, get the thing together. Good stuff. Very good stuff. KE2CDB.
AC2GS. Yeah, it's fascinating, and YouTube is full of these things. There's people trying to teach each other of how to smooth down the whole thing to have it look more professional. There are people who electroplate them so that they have a metal surface on them. All kinds of fun stuff. You know, different types of plastic serve different purposes. You generally don't want to make it into from PLA if you're going to use it outdoors a lot, because PLA is not by itself UV protective, so it breaks down. So there are other types of plastics that are used. Some of them, I think, like to make the rotors out of a more flexible TPU and such. So yeah, it's kind of fascinating how a whole field of hobby kind of popped into existence as soon as the patent expired from the original manufacturers of the 3D printers.
Yeah, QSO. Yeah, I remember when the space program, they were, I mean, I believe the ISS has or still has a 3D printer on board, and the theory was that they didn't have to utilize a payload to get tools up there. They had the machine, they had the materials. If they needed a specific tool, the files were on hand in the ISS. They would manufacture the tools right there, and when they didn't need them anymore, they would recycle the material and go about their business. And I found that to be very, very useful in terms of that technology. And now you see that they do have, I mean, I have some tools that are actually you've been 3D printed that are mechanically sound for what they need to do, the tensile strength, so on and so forth. So it definitely is something to talk about. Kilo Echo 2, Charlie Victor Bravo.
Yeah, I remember when that made the news. I don't know if they're still doing that. Probably, but it's not kind of brand new technology, so they don't promote it that much. You know, it's very reminiscent of good old Star Trek: The Next Generation. They used to have something that you just kind of went over there and said what you needed, and based on a pattern, it would make it for you. And if you were finished with it, it would decompile it and store the matter for the next person who wanted something made out of it. So it's kind of a little touch of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
QSO. Yeah, science becomes reality. All right, I'm going to take it down. I got to go do some soldering work in my workshop. This is KE2CVB, 73s to all. Good night.
73, KE2CVB. Have a good night. Be well, and I hope we'll talk down the line. This continues to be AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any closing comments to make before we call it a night, please hit that push to talk.
Hey, Roy, this is KG2VEA. Just want to say thank you and good night. I'm going to head back to bed time.
Okay, very good, Maxim. Thank you for coming here. Thank you for participating. I do appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who participated. I'll just throw it out one last time. Anyone want to say anything before we do the curtain call? Feel free to hit that push to talk. Very good. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be April 3rd, which will be held by teleconference. Club members will be emailed with the details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin at 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater, and this technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock a.m. on 28.380 upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet, as well as our 10-meter net. Just point your browser at stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a lot less. It's time to call this a night and to shut it all down, but we'll be back to do it all over again March 27th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially my co-host, Bob, KD2NVB. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Have a great time. Stay safe. Be well. We'll talk to you down the line. This is AC2GS, clear.